and Rob, welcome back to Ask an Atheist. It's so wonderful to have you back in the studio.
Hi, Becky.
Shelley Siegel and Rob J. Robertson, up from L.A., at the tail end of your holy tour.
Yes, we have been on the road quite a bit this year and very happy to be back in Tacoma.
Always a treat to have you here. Like always, always, always. Sam and I love it so much when you come up. You're just coming off of playing a show in Tacoma yesterday. And I think just feels very much at home when you're kind of here on stage and, you know, back and forth with an audience who really, I think at this point, we all know each other quite, you know, quite well.
Yeah. It's like just playing to friends. So you can just tease everyone in the audience, which is really fun.
So you have finished up the past, like, I don't know, 5 months or so, going on tour around the country to showcase some of the stuff from your newest EP, Holy.
Yep.
You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. So I've been writing the songs over the last 2 years, these new batch of songs, and we recorded last year the EP in Brooklyn, in New York. I spent a lot of time in Brooklyn last year working on my project and also doing some artist development over there as well. And, we set off at the end of Jan, and we did 3 straight months on the road, just me and Rob, and we did not kill each other. I'm very proud of us for that, but we did.
As someone who has gone on tour with their partner in a car, that's a respectable accomplishment.
It's an achievement, I think. So we did 32 dates on that tour, and then now we're doing a little West Coast run, and the EP is called Holy, and it's pretty jam-packed with, you know, political opinions or just opinions, I guess. And you know, I'm really happy about that because that's what I like to do with music. I like to be pokey and say what I think. And I called the EP Holy. To me, that was a really powerful statement to make because I feel like, for me growing up, what was holy was dictated to me by my community, by my religion. And I feel like in Judaism, it's often about what's elevated, you know, this idea of holiness. Certain things are elevated. We elevate behaviors. We elevate every day through rituals. And so it was an idea that I was brought up with and that I like. I do like elevating things in my life. But it was in this, through Judaism, it was always dictated to me, you know, these are the words that are holy. These are the items that are holy. But for me now, as an adult, I've broken out of that and I get to decide for myself what is sacred, which words are sacred, which actions and behaviors are sacred, and even which people are sacred, and that the feminine is sacred, and I am sacred and holy. So it was really cool to call myself and my voice, which is not allowed to be heard in the synagogue unaccompanied, to call that holy was a really empowering statement for me, and I hope, you know, for other people as well, that they will be inspired to decide for themselves what's holy to them.
Definitely pushing that concept, but that wasn't the only thing that was kind of like pushing your previous kind of subjects and things like that. I really heard this EP as songs that were much edgier and darker in both subject matter and in tone than some of the stuff that I'm used to hearing from you. Was that something that kind of arose organically or that you aimed for?
No, I think it arose organically. I think a lot of it was influenced by my being here in the US and things sort of being more polarized and being felt more, more virulently. You know, in Australia, I think it's a lot easier to be, you know, to be separate from the rest of the world, I think. And here it's not, you know, I wrote Blood. When I first came, Blood, one of the tunes on the EP, when I first came to the US, and I moved to the US in 2016, and it was just before the election, And the then Republican nominee was saying these really racist things, you know, publicly, dog whistling racist. And it was the time when everyone was, you know, responding to Colin Kaepernick's protests with, you know, either support or really horrible, you know, horrible opposition. And was also a time when Black Lives Matter was becoming, was gaining international recognition as a movement. And it was like, you know, that was what I landed in. And it was, you know, a wake-up call for me about racism in this country and also in my own country. And that's really where Blood stemmed from. So I feel like with a lot of songs on this EP, really impacted by my being here in the US. And
I think one of the reasons that Blood resonated with me, I think, comes from our shared cultural heritage as individuals who grew up Jewish and connected to that kind of sort of ritualistic a community, and that sort of like haunting echo of blood, the blood that was shed. I always loved growing up with the Passover Seder, and then coming at it from a secular viewpoint, you realize how othering and separatizing it really is.
Yes.
You are, when you're entrenched in it, you're celebrating your own freedom from oppression. But from an outside perspective, I think it really hit when at some point we would always have family friends come to Passover Seders to celebrate. You know, it's wonderful. It's triumph. It's freedom from oppression, and it's liberty, and you can make your own choices and have agency, and you're no longer slaves to any of the metaphorical things that we as humans and societies become slaves to. And it really hit me when one of the family friends was a colleague of my mother. She happens to be of Egyptian heritage. And it gave my parents pause, saying, oh, yes, we love incorporating anyone into our interfaith Passover Seders. Oh, wait, what does this look like from the perspective of an Egyptian person?
Of us literally celebrating the deaths of the Egyptians.
Right. And so that chorus, that refrain of blood over and over again, that is sort of said in a celebratory way during the Passover Seder.
Yes.
Just becomes very haunting when you realize, you know, that it's something that's used to, in your own celebration, entrench other kind of differences and separations between groups of people.
Totally. Did you know that this song was based off the Passover Seder?
I got those senses.
Oh,
from
yeah,
it.
That's
I'm
so cool.
That's why it resonated with
yes,
me. And I'm
that's
like,
so cool.
It must be running through your mind.
I'm so happy that you picked up on it, because I was explaining what was, you know, bubbling in terms of, like, you know, what was going on in the world around me at that time, and my response was to think, like, well, how do we deal with tribalism, how do we deal with suffering? I'm seeing all this suffering. What is the way that we respond to it? And it made me think back to, okay, well, what does my tradition, even though I don't follow it anymore, you know, just as that thought experiment, what does my tradition say about how we should deal with these issues? And my mind went straight back to the Passover Seder. And I remember, you know, there's the moment in the Seder where we say, oh, we will remember the suffering of the Egyptians. And the ritual that we do for that, as you know, is we take our fingers and we dip them into a glass of wine, and then we take a drop of the wine for each one of the plagues and put it on the side of your plate. So you do that 10 times for each of the plagues to symbolize that, you know, we remember the suffering of others. And meanwhile, we're singing this song, this sing-song, like, you know, nursery rhyme style listing of the 10 plagues. And to me, you know, just thinking about that as an adult, you think, well, is that really enough? Like, it's symbolic. Okay, we're remembering blood, frogs, I remember it in Hebrew, you know, and then we sing at the end, the death of the firstborn. Like, and if you're singing about the deaths of children in this sing-song voice, like, how much is it really resonating internally, what we're singing about? And actually, the refrain at the start of the song, blood, is taken from that tune, that blood, blood. That's how I started the whole song.
Do you want to share it with us?
Yes, I would love to. Blood,
blood, blood, blood, blood, blood, blood, blood. See the blood spill if I spill mine. Will I feel better? Will I feel just fine? Oh, blood. Yeah, blood, 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 blood. I see the blood spill if I spill mine. Will I feel better? Will I feel just fine? Oh, blood. Yeah, blood, 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 blood. It flows through our veins. How can something that makes us the same be used? Something to divide. It flows through our veins. How can something that makes us the same be used as something to divide? Blood, 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 blood. You see the blood spill if you spill mine. Will you feel better? Will you feel just fine? Oh, blood. Yeah, blood, 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 blood. You see the blood spill if you spill mine. Will you feel better? Will you feel just fine? Oh, blood. Yeah, blood, 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 blood. It flows through our veins. How can something that makes us the same be used to something to divide? It flows through our veins. How can something that makes us the same be used to something to divide? They all fall down into the river, into the river. Why would you harden their hearts? They all fall down into the river, into the river. Why would you harden their hearts? I see the blood spill if I spill mine. Will I feel better? Will I feel just fine? Oh, blood. Yeah, blood, 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 blood. It flows through our veins. How can something that makes us the same be used as something to divide? It flows through our veins. How can something that makes us the same be used as something to divide? Blood, 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 blood.
Yeah, it's so Seder. Like, it's all about the Seder and the
tribalism inherent in it. That's so great.
That's a cool story about the Egyptian.
Well, yeah, as soon as you hear harden people's hearts and into the river and blood, anyone that who has that heritage of year after year repeating this kind of liturgy, repeating the storytelling, it instantaneously comes up. So I'm venturing that I'm not the only one for whom this said, oh, that's Passover.
Yeah, and it makes, you know, it always makes me wonder now as an adult, having that distance from my religion, you know, we hear in that Passover Seder story that, you know, Moses went to the Pharaoh and asked to let the Jews go, and Pharaoh said no, and so then the next round of plagues would come. But it literally tells us that it was God that hardened Pharaoh's heart to say no, and it makes you question, like, why
is he toying with this person
and with the lives of all the Egyptians, like, why? But also with the Jews. I mean, if what you really want is for them to be free, why are you hardening the Pharaoh's heart against your own people? It's just a very confusing story, and it doesn't paint God in a very good picture. And I guess I sort of took that into the modern context of these issues. I'm saying, like, you know, how hardened have our hearts been by all this violence and hatred that we're able to, you know, dismiss nonviolent protests so aggressively.
So, you know, you're no stranger to writing about common humanity and personal independence and agency. Have you had any thoughts about writing about the current crises related to migrants coming to the United States and the treatment that they are receiving, both within the public discourse and rhetoric and physically while they're being detained?
Absolutely. I've definitely, you know, and this is something that is, you know, it's not a new thing for us, for myself and Rob either. We, you know, coming from Australia, have seen our government perpetrating these injustices against people for at least a decade. We have, you know, really politicized policies against asylum seekers coming to our country who've come all the way by boat. And we've kept children in concentration camps offshore without, you know, great facilities for a really long time. And I feel like it's only going to get worse. And yeah, definitely it's something that I want to write about. I've started working on a song that is a bit more, I've started working on something. It's not exactly as, I feel like it's not as direct as some of these, but it's more about, you know, envisioning someone having to leave in that, you know, that moment before they go. So that's something that I'm working on at the moment, and hopefully, you know, have a lot more to say about that in the future.
Definitely look forward to hearing about it. You know, many atheists and humanists kind of discover you when they hear your tracks from your concept album, an atheist album.
And from your show.
Yeah. Okay, and from Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. But do you ever feel limited by having that fan base as sort of your nascent American fan base?
No, I'm really proud of it. You know, I'm really proud that people feel like that it can be a voice for them. Like, you know, less and less I want to be associated with a label. It's kind of like, I think the atheist label is really important for us to be able to, you know, congregate and around the issues that affect us and use that, you know, for normalizing our worldview and for, you know, for instance, with Foundation Beyond Belief, like, you know, for cultivating a community that can do good. I think it's important and relevant, but, you know, I want to get to a place where we don't need to identify under that label because it's just understood and it's such a common position. So, you know, I don't find it limiting. I want to speak for so many communities and organizations, and I want to feel like I'm giving grassroots activists from all different areas of voice. So I'm very proud that I can be that for that community, for this community, and hopefully I can do that for more as well. Nice. And also it's so nice when you connect with someone really deeply about a very personal experience. And I think in this country and all around the world, you know, people are going through that experience of leaving their tradition, of questioning. I mean, some people, you know, who just never had to go through that transition, and it's still important to be represented, have your views represented. But for people who have been through that specific journey of leaving and coming out on the other side, it's a very personal experience. It can be a very traumatic and challenging experience. And so when I meet people at my shows that have been through that and the music is speaking directly to that experience, it's very powerful. I feel like it's powerful for them, and it's really powerful for me when people connect to my songs in that way, and they tell me, oh, it reminds me of when this happened in my journey, then I remember that story and I carry it with me. And when I play those songs around the country and around the world, I feel like I'm carrying all those people's stories with me, and it's a really beautiful exchange.
I can see how that absolutely is beautiful. And there's one thing that in the last year or so has really potently affected a lot of the broader atheist community. And you know, for this EP, you swap out your sort of lower vocals for some of your more typical higher range on the track San Antonio.
Mm.
Can you talk about the process of addressing that subject matter, both lyrically and musically?
Sure. And so what I'm about to say discusses a true account of a murder-suicide that happened last year in San Antonio. And so, you know, if you feel like that might be disturbing discussion to be part of, you know, we'd skip ahead a few minutes perhaps. Okay, so basically there was a member of the community who was well known and was involved with different organizations and had a podcast as well, and they also were suffering with different issues, and they committed a murder suicide, and I describe it as the murder suicide of Jennifer Smith, and it was something that, you know, very strangely we saw unfold in real time online. So I was in Los Angeles in the morning, and I woke up and looked at my Facebook, and I saw a post from this person that said goodbye. And that was, you know, very worrying, and I sort of stayed on the post all day. There was a thread that grew underneath that post that I know that hundreds if not thousands of people were following as well, with great concern. And so friends of this person went round to their house and, you know, and put on the thread, I'm going round to their house now, I'm going to check what's happening. And they started live streaming so that we could see what was happening, and we could see the SWAT car, we could see the police blocking off the roads. People from all over the country were sending in, you know, links to news reports that there was a gunman holding hostage, and people were saying, "Is this in San Antonio? Is this the street? Is this the story? Is this what's happening?" Everyone trying to understand what was going on, until eventually, one of our friends, who was live streaming, shared the announcement by the chief of police that that Jennifer had been murdered, and also just talking about the weapon that was used. It was all just completely surreal, you know, going between this like Facebook made up world that we engage in, this like, you know, in the ether world, and then to that real world footage, and it just felt so surreal. And I know so many people were really, really distressed, and it was you felt helpless as well, like there was nothing you could do. And so I don't know, I couldn't do anything for the rest of the day. I just sat in my bathroom on the floor, and I started writing about it, and I didn't know what to say, because I feel like there was so much you could say. And even after it happened, the thread became so politicized. People were very angry at the person who had committed this crime. And then people who were this person's friend were like, you know, you can't come on here and say this about our friend in this moment. And some people were saying, like, this is a problem with mental illness, and people were saying, how can you continue that stigma? And then people were saying, this is an issue about domestic abuse and violence, and people saying, well, you feminists coming on here and politicizing everything. And it just turned into this huge, and it was like, well, this is, I mean, yes, all these political issues are involved, but then at the same time, this is a family that have just been through an absolute tragedy, and friends that are, you know, just going through, and family that are going through the most horrific time you ever could in your life. And I didn't know what to say or think, so I just thought, okay, I'm just gonna say what happened and remove, you know, any sort of judgment from that. And because I find music, when I don't know how to process something inside of my brain, this is like an external processing unit, really. So I tried to tell the story like that. And then recently on this tour, I got to go to San Antonio, where this community live, and many people who are friends with Jennifer and the whole family, and you know, were really impacted so heavily by this tragedy. And you know, I talked to them before the gig, and I said, "I've written this song, and is it okay to play?" And they told me how they wanted it to be introduced. They said, "Yes, we're happy for this story to be told, and we want it. You know, we don't want this person's name mentioned, and we want, you know, this story of the murder of Jennifer Smith to be told, and also, you know, that this is something that the community has gone through, but also that so many people, as you say, in the wider community were affected by it and in a way stand with the people in San Antonio that have gone through this."
I think it is a really potent way to, as you said, process something that so many people need to process in a different way, and for music to just at its barest state what happened, but through music was a really interesting take, and it was one that got me thinking again. People can listen to it on your EP, Holy.
Yes.
On another, I guess, more triumphant note, you have dropped a track more recently.
Yes.
That's separate from your EP, but it's in celebration of International Women's Day.
Yes.
Would you like to share that with us?
Absolutely. Now is the hour for the woman's voice, around the world for a woman's choice. We will not rest until we all are free in our right to live with autonomy. We will mourn, we will cry for all those who have died. We will sing, we will dance. This is our resistance. We will learn, we will thrive. We will fight to survive. We were born for this chance. This is our resistance. It's our resistance. We were born for this chance. This is our resistance. Oh, the war, it comes from all sides, from governments and family ties. We will not fail. We hold our mother's plans to be heard in all of our demands. And we will mourn, we will cry for all those who have died. We will sing, we will dance. This is our resistance. We will learn, we will thrive, we will fight to survive. We were born for this chance. This is our resistance. Ooh. Ooh. Have died. We will sing, we will dance. This is our resistance. We will learn, we will thrive, we will fight to survive. We were born for this chance. This is our resistance. It's our resistance. We were born for this chance. This is our resistance.
I love it so much. Where were some of the places that you were debuting the song, or what did you write it for? I mean, I know you said International Women's Day.
Yeah. So, I mean, this song feels so great to sing too. It feels really empowering. And the way that it came about is really is really cool and really special for me. There's an organization in the UK that I'm sure that we've talked about before, the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain. And I've worked with them quite a bit over the last 7 years. Actually, 6 or 7 years, been playing at their events, and just a really, you know, admirer and advocate of their work, and proud of, and so proud to be affiliated with them. They fight for the rights of Islamic women and girls and the Islamic population, equal access to the law for the Islamic population in the UK. And Rob and I have been over a couple of times in the last few years to perform at their conferences. And so last year in November 2018, we went for a conference, and I and Mariam Namazi, the founder of the organization, she said, play a song, which they wanted me to close the conference with a song about resistance, she said. And so I was just going to play Saved, which is, you know, my most resisty song. but throughout the whole day, I was so inspired, as always, by the conferences that they hold, which is, you know, speaker after speaker, pretty much all female speakers, activists, advocates from all around the world who are, you know, fighting the good fight for women's rights in their respective countries. And they all had something different to say, but the message that they had, there was something that resonated, I think, through everybody's talk. It was this message that I was receiving loud and clear, and I thought, you know what, I want to reflect what they're saying. And so that day, just before my set, I went upstairs at the venue to some little room I could find on my own, and I wrote this song. And to me, it was, yeah, a reflection of the message that they were sharing, that they're doing this for the women, their sisters, who have been killed just for trying to get an education, who have not lived through this fight, but their courage for themselves, for their mothers, for their daughters, and for all of humankind. It was just so powerful and so, you know, it's ready. We're ready for these voices. And so, yes, I wrote this song on the spot, and then I got up at the end and I debuted it. And I was so proud to be able to say, you know, this is the message that I've received, and hopefully you feel it's your message reflected back at you in song. And I was very nervous. It was like the first time I'd pretty much played it all the way through. And they really liked it. And so this March, in the middle of our tour, we had to, like, dump our car somewhere where we left it. Where did we even leave it? I think with a friend. And we flew to London, and we played this song and another song that we've written for them. We've written an anthem for ex-Muslims, and we performed those two songs for another conference for them in March. And we also, then we recorded, you know, the Council of Ex-Muslims organized with me to record this song, create the video, and to release it for International Women's Day.
That process of just being able to take in so much information and then make something from it and reflect back those voices, I think, is one of the talents that I'm in awe of and admiration of any singer-songwriter. And I know that you've had, since coming to the States, a lot of different experiences with collaborating with individuals and in different places. You know, this EP has a lot more Americana flavoring to
it. American issues, American influence, Americana. Yes, I've absorbed the country.
Well, the sound of it, too. Like, is that a Nashville influence, or is it, like, being within the American folk music tradition communities? Like, what's kind of going on there?
I think it's both. And I think it's also, like, you know, Rob and I have spent so much time driving through the country, and we listen to local community radio, and we listen to country radio, and, you know, there's country pop, but then there's proper, you know, old school stations that are playing Americana, folk, bluegrass, you know, even alt country. And I love rock, and I love all these, you know, organic sounds and organic instruments. So I think that's really, you know, we've really absorbed that. I've really absorbed, well, Rob wants to get a banjo. And our friend Matt Delahunty was kind enough to give us his mountain strum stick, which is even twangier than anything we've done before. So look out for the next album. But yeah, I think I've definitely absorbed those sounds, and I think mostly from from traveling around the U.S. and listening to the music.
It's an amazing sort of musical adventure, sort of hearing that unfold, since, you know, you venture into so many different little genres between jazz, and you've got some, you know, electronic sort of elements on different albums or EPs that you have. And this is a personally fun one and enjoyable one for me my musical taste. So.
I think this is really, this is my favorite. I mean, I guess you always feel that way about whatever you're working at the moment. My favorite things is, like, even with our resistance, you know, I got comments on the video from people saying, like, look, I don't like country. It's not my style, but I'm going to share it because of the message. So that
okay.
made me laugh.
Win.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I do find it, I do like to jump around with my genres. I think it probably comes from growing up in a wedding band and seeing, like, a bunch of different genres all across the night.
Well, can I make a final request to maybe wrap us up?
Yes.
Let's see. Holy Man, is that one? That kind of gets back to that irreverent and anti-religious kind of feel that so many of us discovered you through.
Yeah, that's a bit of fun. Let's do that, Rob.
Who is the holy man and what does he believe? That we must cover up our bodies, we must show humility. Well, I believe my body is beautiful and it belongs to me. What makes a holy man? What does he decree? There is an order to this place and he's atop the hierarchy. Well, I believe there's no one above me and no one underneath. But I'm a sinner, I'm a whore, I'm rotten to the core, and you're the holy man. Well, it's you that he confides, you have God on your side, and you're the holy man. Yeah, you're the holy man. The holy man, he's calling for our souls, that we must kneel, beg forgiveness like it's something that we owe. Well, I believe our only stipulation is the kindness that we show. But I'm a sinner, I'm a whore, I'm rotten to the core, and you're the holy man. Well, it's you that he confides, you have God on your side, and you're the holy man. Yeah, you're the holy man. I'm a whore, I'm rotten to the core, and you're the holy man. Well, it's you that he confides, you have God on your side, and you're the holy man. Yeah, you're the holy man. Said you're the holy man.
Shelley, Rob, it's lovely having you in the studio again. You can find more from Shelley at shelleysegal.com. That's SHELLEYSEGAL. You can find more at bandsintown.com/ShelleySegal. You're also on YouTube and Facebook and Patreon and throughout LA.
Yes.
Thank you so much again for joining us on Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. It's been a pleasure. This episode of Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey was produced by me, Becky Friedman. Listen to all past episodes at atheist.radio. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Ask an Atheist WA. email us at questions@atheist.radio and leave us a voicemail anytime, toll free at 844-753-7842.